Hello and welcome to Baseball Barbacast, the only baseball podcast in the world who knows that the only thing to trade is trade itself. I'm Jake Mintz, and that's Jordan Schusterman. FDR would have loved the trade deadline, man. I mean, the New Deal?
Oh, man. Deals, new deals left and right. I can't wait over the next couple weeks how many new deals we get. And first of all, hi, Jake. It's nice to see you. We haven't podcasted together at the same time for quite some time. You and Mr. Foolish Baseball did a fantastic job on Monday, which I listened to on my commute back to my hometown here in Indiana. But it's happy to be back. And hey, as you mentioned, it's deadline season. This is great. This is one of my favorite things about this time of year is it's like we come down from All-Star and then it's like, oh, shit, here we go. Right into a totally different kind of baseball discussion and one that I am very excited to have with you here on this podcast. The bulk of this show is going to be a preview of the trade deadline, mostly from the lens of the teams. Of course, we will be hitting on some specific players as we go, but I think with a couple weeks, less than a couple weeks left before the August 1st trade deadline, I think we want to put teams into categories as we love to do on this podcast and try and understand which directions all these 30 teams are going to be going over the next couple weeks. Then we'll take a break and we come back, talk about the Reds who are in some trouble. I was there in Cincinnati last night. All the runs that were scored on Tuesday night, what the hell was going on there? And then a couple other fun topics at the end. But Jake, where do you want to begin with trade deadline preview or anything else before we get started?
The Reds have the Blues, man.
They do. They are very much in the Blues territory. All right, Jake, let's talk about the Reds will be a part of this discussion for sure. But how are we going to organize this trade deadline preview discussion?
We want you to imagine an ecosystem that is all about garage sales. Some people, some teams, are putting the garage sales on their front lawns. Some are whipping around the neighborhood in pickup trucks looking to buy items from the other garage sales. Various teams are doing this activity with differing levels of intensity and fervor. And that is the lens through which we will view this trade deadline. And Jordan, let me ask you, have you ever been to a garage sale or had one at your house?
I have. Definitely attended some in the neighborhood. It is an interesting concept. And I think we'll lean into this bad analogy as much as possible because something that I find interesting about garage sales as a concept is like when you're driving down a street and there's a sign that says garage sale this way, but you're not going that way. And I often wonder, like, unless you're walking, like maybe you're walking through the neighborhood and it's like, oh, like I'll just go and check it out. But I always think about like how much, and this is relevant to the conversation we're going to have, how badly are you trying to buy something? Because most people are not going to necessarily go out of their way to go to the garage sale. But if you're just driving past one and you see it, there's no sign, you're just seeing a bunch of stuff in the yard. That's a much more human inclination to pull over and say, hey, let's see what kind of deals we can get. And so I think that's kind of how we're going to think about the team. Who is going out of the way? Who sees the sign that says, hey, garage sale 1 mile down the road and says, I got to go check this out.
Floor
the ones that are only pulling over. Right. Yeah.
Pedal to the metal. But let's actually begin at the other end of the spectrum here, which is who has shit to sell. There are a variety of different types of sellers. There are bad teams who plan to be bad, who have nothing to give. There are teams who plan to be bad, who have a little bit to give. And then there are the teams who thought they were going to be good and things did not go their way. And so instead they are pivoting to sellers. And that's where we're going to begin. The group of teams that they are the top quality garage sale. There is so much for people to pick through, and that is the Chicago White Sox and the St. Louis Cardinals. Let's start with the Cardinals. Their GM, John Mozeliak, has already said publicly, we are focused on the 2024 team, which is an unbelievable way to say we're selling.
And the Cardinals have promptly responded with two excellent victories, including they're on a W4 now. We got a Nolan Arenado walk-off home run last night that was exactly the kind of moment that we thought would come, you know, in late May that would spark this run back to the top of the division. But here we are in the middle of July. The Cardinals are still 10.5 out. They're 11 games under 500 still. And the bigger picture thing about what John Mozeliak said is, we need pitching. We need to change the way we think about pitching. And the funny part about that is part of that means trading the pitchers we have right now, a lot of it is because, you know, two of the main ones, Jordan Montgomery and Jack Flaherty, are about to hit free agency, but they need better pitching in every sense of the word. And so it seems like that is going to be the priority moving forward. And they have the pieces to sell. And it's weird because the Cardinals have literally never been in this position in my lifetime. And I'm very fascinated to see how they go about this.
Right. So there are kind of two main buckets here. There's the short-term rental type pitchers they can trade away. You mentioned Montgomery, Flaherty. There's also Jordan Hicks is a free agent at the end of this year. Who knows what they'll get back for him.
Stratton.
And then there is the Paul Goldschmidt conversation. And after spending a lot of time jumping into it yesterday, I actually think they should trade Paul Goldschmidt. Goldschmidt is a free agent after the 2024 season. So he's a free agent after next year. Yes, I believe that the Cardinals, the best version of them in 2024, might have Paul Goldschmidt on it. But if you want to bring back a big haul of young, talented pitching, I mean, Paul Goldschmidt is going to do that for you. And it's not like they don't have bats, right? Just Jordan Walker should probably be a first baseman right now. He's horrible in the outfield. Horrendous. And he's not playing third base over Nolan Arenado anytime soon. And so opening up first base would be really good. I know it's bizarre to say, hey, you got to trade your reigning MVP. But Goldschmidt's been great. He's been Paul Goldschmidt. And I'm sure a team would pencil him into the middle of their order and send a lot of young pitching back in return.
Yeah, I hear that. I disagree just from the standpoint of I view him in a similar, not as extreme, light as Soto, which we'll get to with the Padres, where it's like, fine. So this season is a disaster, but like you have this guy on your team next year. And as John Mozeliak said, we want to be good in 2024. The Cardinals cannot afford to go into a full-blown rebuild. And so I think it's more likely that they're going to trade from the depth of younger guys to try and get some big talent, whether that is a Newt Barr, whether even a Gorman or Carlson. I know Carlson doesn't have a ton of value right now,
but Brendan
like
Donovan.
Stuff like that. I think it's way Burleson. Like it's way that makes way more sense to me than like there's nothing you're going to get for Goldschmidt that is going to make you as good in 2024 as just having Goldschmidt. So I see what you're saying. If we're going a lot more backwards and you really want to bring in something big, I just think that the trade value for some of those younger guys might actually be closer to Goldschmidt than you realize. And so that's where kind of mad on that. But still, there's so much to give. They're going to overhaul the pitching. So many of these pitchers are going to go. And I don't know. I'm also curious, like, which of these guys had the most value? Do you try to package them to a team that desperately needs pitching? You know, doing a Montgomery plus Stratton or Flaherty plus Hicks or whatever? I don't know. And then the other thing about it is, what do those pitchers look like on other teams? I'm fascinated by. Like, can someone find a way to have Hicks not be so volatile? Probably not, but I can imagine some teams would like to try.
We talked about this in respect to the draft, where when a team drafts a certain player, it changes the way we think about that prospect.
Yeah.
And that's how I will feel about whoever gets Jordan Hicks. If the Guardians get Jordan Hicks, I think he's going to be the best pitcher in the world. And if a team that's bad at pitching development gets Jordan Hicks, then I won't.
Yeah. And even Flaherty, like, I know it's going to be probably harder to make those adjustments on the fly for a starting pitcher, but we'll see. In his stuff, he certainly still doesn't look like quite what he ever was at his peak, but he's at least healthy enough and has shown flashes where it's like he could be, and he has as much incentive as anybody to pitch as well as possible for a good team down the stretch, because you would think that he would be in line to make a lot of money if he could be healthy and be good.
Now, if the St. Louis Cardinals are a dope garage sale, the Chicago White Sox are a rich person dying estate sale, because there is so much here. And that is a true reputation.
So much expensive stuff.
So much expensive stuff. I'm just going to read through the list of players, actually, to start. Lance Lynn has a team option, $18 million for 2024. Yasmani Grandal is a free agent at the end of next year. Liam Hendricks has a team option, $15 million for next season. I doubt that gets picked up. Tim Anderson, $14 million team option for next season. Mike Clevenger, $12 million mutual option for next season. Joe Kelly, $9.5 million club option for next season. Elvis Andrews is a free agent. And then Giolito, Reynaldo Lopez, and Keenan Middleton are all free agents after the year. Wow.
Damn. This is like I think the reason why I'm most fascinated this is like, this is so much to move. It would be hard to like get all this done in the last 24 hours. You know, like this is the team that they're unlike even the Cardinals where you could say, oh, maybe like they're so far gone. Like they probably got to start doing business pretty soon here. And the sequence of how they decide to move some of these pieces, and some of them are huge decisions, right? Are you going to sell all time low on Tim Anderson? I know you talked a little bit about that on Monday. You know, Giolito might be the easier one to do, but Lance Lynn is another one where Lance Lynn is having a bizarre season. He has like a career high in strikeout rate and has just been horrific in every other sense. And I don't know what to make of that, but I can totally imagine teams being like, hell yeah, Lance Lynn, like that guy, I still would want to give that guy the ball in October. I know he's got a million ERA and I still believe that.
Lucas's ERA jumped an entire half run yesterday, yeah, as the Mets pulverized him into juice at Citi Field. I still think he will get dealt, and I still think he is the type of pitcher you feel comfortable starting in a postseason game. And to me, when you trade for a pitcher at the deadline, there are two types of guys. There's depth arm, and then there's, do I feel comfortable giving you the ball in a postseason game? Mm-hmm. And I think Giolito is one of like four or five guys on the market where you could give him the ball in a postseason game and feel relatively comfortable. Now, do I think any of these hitters get traded and have any kind of value? No, I really don't. Grandal is the one where he's been okay, but he's a catcher. And so if you have a 94 OPS plus as a catcher, it's not great, but it's a startable player, especially considering that, you know, defensively people love his framing metrics. The issue there is you don't often see teams trading for starting catchers in the middle of seasons because it's really hard to onboard those guys.
Yeah, I'm really skeptical of that. And I just don't think the Tim Anderson thing, I'm going to be so fascinated if they pick up that option. I still honestly think they will, but we'll see. That would be, he is, I think, maybe by far, besides Ohtani, the most interesting guy I want to see if he gets traded. Because as you mentioned on Monday, he's been the worst hitter. So, but can he possibly be this bad? Probably not.
Just a quick correction. Just a quick correction.
Oh, yeah.
Yasmani Grandal's framing numbers seem to have fallen off a cliff last 2 years. And, Jordan, he has the worst pop time in the league, which is kind of important now. I love that he is the worst pop time in baseball and is one of the slowest, I think maybe the slowest player in the league. So he is slow coming out of the crouch and moving his feet.
Agreed. I think Lopez and Middleton are both great targets for literally any team. Like those are guys that just like could probably be good plug and play sixth, seventh inning dudes, and who they could also, you could also imagine a good team getting a lot more out of, especially a guy like Lopez. And let's just acknowledge quickly, because his name gets brought up a lot, Dylan Cease has, you know, under contract through 2025. He's the one where, yeah, if you're blowing it up to an extreme degree, sure, you shop him. I just can't see him being at the front of their mind of trying to make sure that this is a productive deadline when you have this many other guys to try and move for the best available pieces. And you could trade him in the offseason, I think, for a pretty similar rate.
All right, let's fly through the next category, Jordan, which is next, the typical bad teams.
Yeah.
Typical bad team, like you just go to a garage sale and like there's just one or two nice things there. The Nationals, we'll start with them. Jaime Candelario, he'll get dealt. He's a nice piece. Great turnaround season for him. All right, moving on to the Pirates, who have just spiraled into oblivion over the last month and a half. Rich Hill, Carlos Santana are probably the two guys who you could see getting moved. Hill, even though he's 95 years old, has been a league average starter. No way in hell you give him the ball in a postseason game. But if you need a depth rotation piece for the rest of the year, he's totally doable.
Also, no chance they're trading Kutch. I'm just going to say that now. Yeah. Like that, no way. So putting that to bed.
Carlos Santana, vibe god, who has been a league average hitter. He's a totally legitimate bench bat for a contender. The Tigers, the conversation there, well, let's just say all-star Michael Lorenzen. He's a free agent at the end of the year. Totally fine depth rotation piece. You can move him to the bullpen, use him as a long man. On the offensive side, not a whole lot to deal from. Eduardo Rodriguez, who was incredible for the first couple of months. I know he's been hurt since then. He has an opt-out after the year. unclear if he's going to take it or not. It's right on the edge. And so it's kind of a risky guy to trade for, because if you trade for him and he's bad and he opts into the contract, then you're paying a bad starting pitcher an average of 16.5 over the next 3 years. So could he get moved? Yes. Do I think he'll get moved? Probably not. Let me just say the last team in this group, the Colorado Rockies, who tend to be very conservative at the deadline, they, I think, will be a little more active than usual. Randall Grichuk is the big piece to move. He'll be a free agent at the end of the year. He's just a boring, like, eight-hole hitter, corner outfielder, non-offensive guy. CJ Krohn, similar, but a first base bat. That's really it. German Marquez probably would have gotten traded, but he blew out and got TJ. I really don't think there's a whole lot else. Charlie Blackman's a free agent at the end of the year, but I can't see him getting moved.
He's hurt right now, but Brent Suter was a beast for the first half of the year, and that's a reliever I could totally see someone wanting to go after. And Grichuk's been awesome. Like, again, I understand if you're not been watching the Rockies, but he's the kind of guy, like, to me, he's in, like, the Hunter Renfro category of, like, when he's hot, like, he can really, really help you. He's totally in the, you know, jock Eddie Rosario bucket of just, like, can hit four homers in a postseason series. And you're like, holy shit, Randall Grichuk, they got him for an A-ball pitcher. So he's, I do think, one to watch. And Krohn sort of fits that too, but Grichuk a little bit longer track record.
The two teams that have basically already been stripped for parts are the Oakland A's and the Kansas City Royals. Garage sales where there's just not enough to pick through. Chapman already dealt to the Rangers a couple weeks ago. And there's really maybe Brad Keller or Scott Barlow on the Royals.
Yeah.
Zach Greinke's not going anywhere. Right. Not a whole lot else to choose from. And then on the A's, I mean, we don't have to talk about the A's.
Yeah, I mean, they have relievers. You know, Trevor May would make sense. I mean, Tony Kemp coming into the year before he was hitting as poorly as he would, I could totally see that one. Laureano and Blackburn, who have been good for them in recent years, like, have more years of control. Maybe some team loves them and wants to trade for them. Again, going back to the garage sale, sometimes you go past a garage sale and there's so little on the lawn. You're like, was this worth it? Like, why are you even bothering to, like, advertise this? Like, I'm not, you know, swerving over to pick up, you know, look at one table of things. But at the same time, they're the two worst teams in the league. We know they are going to be trying to make trades. So we have to mention them here.
That is the sellers. Let's quickly talk about the teams in the uncomfortable gray middle and begin with the Chicago Cubs, who you described as organizing their items for a garage sale, but have not yet put the for sale sign outside. The Cubs are 8.5 back in the wild card, 7 back right now of the Brewers in the NL Central. They will not win either of those. It's just not going to happen with the team they have. The big thing that they'll have to trade is Cody Bellinger.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, and he's of course been one of the surprising whatever you would call it, bounce backs of the season. But he's been everything you could possibly hope for when you give Cody Bellinger a whatever $19 million 1 year contract after looking like one of the worst hitters in baseball for the last few years. And maybe there are still Cubs fans who are looking at the plus 33 run differential and saying, hey, maybe there's still a chance we're not that far back. But again, they're in a situation where with Bellinger, with Stroman, with some of the other guys, like, they could retool in a real way and not necessarily go all the way. We knew that when they signed a lot of these guys besides Dansby, and I know Tyon's been a disaster, which is unfortunate. He's gotten unlucky in some respect. We knew that this was not necessarily going to be like the core besides Dansby. There's still more coming. There's still a young group that they have. So they could do this and not go back into full-scale rebuild. Like, they can do this the right way and be good again next year, or good for, I guess, the first time in a while next year. But it's delicate. It is delicate.
Bellinger is a super interesting piece. I mean, he plays center field well, and he's hitting over 300 somehow, and he's been inexplicably better against lefties than righties this year, which is super bizarre. And he has a 137 OPS plus. Like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
You know, there aren't too many teams that need a center fielder, but I think actually the Yankees are a really good fit for him. Mm-hmm. Left-handed hitter. They need an outfield bat. He's not going to cost them a lot. The money, who cares about the money? I guess the Yankees do because they want to get under the luxury tax. But I think Bellinger will definitely get moved, and that's got to be seen as a big win for the Cubs. Three other teams that are in the soft middle. the Angels, the Mets, and the Padres. Three teams we have talked a ton about on this podcast, and I don't want to spend a whole lot of time hopping into them here. Quickly, I'm just going to fly through these, Jordan, and then we'll take a break. I'm not even going to let you talk. Number one, the Mets. The Mets can't really sell. And the reason the Mets can't really sell is because they don't have anything to sell. Yes, they have Tommy Pham and David Robertson. Sure. Carlos Carrasco, I guess. But does it really make sense for them to sell those pieces off for something small in return? Maybe, probably not. Scherzer and Verlander, I don't think are going anywhere. The best version of the 2024 Mets, and you better freaking believe Steve Cohen is planning to contend next year, involves Scherzer and Verlander somehow turning the clock back and being good. And the logistical lift it would be to move those two guys at this deadline is just not worth the hassle, I think. And so I would expect the Mets to kind of stay put over the next couple of weeks. That's them. The Padres are a different story, because if there's one thing we know about AJ Preller, the man does not like to stay put. This team is either going to go for it or not. The Padres have underwhelmed all season long, and if they do choose to sell, there are a ton of interesting pieces for them to trade away. Blake Snell, Josh Hader, Michael Wacha are kind of the three headline guys. Anything on those three players specifically, Jordan?
Yeah, I mean, I think the way that they've sort of looked recently, I think they're heading towards keeping all these guys and just hanging on to it, because I don't think they have the stomach to totally punt on this season, even if they are around 500 in a couple of weeks. So, and yeah, like Snell would be, with the way that he's been pitching, he is by far the most attractive rental non-Otani division. And I would be fascinated. But also to anyone that's watched Blake Snell knows there's still risk in selling the farm for 2 months of a guy who can revert back to walking six guys per nine.
Blake Snell has been the best pitcher in the world over the last 2 months, which pains me to say as Blake Snell hater number one. The last team to talk about is the Angels, which is the whole Otani conversation. Will they, won't they? The Angels have played better over the last couple games. You know, they took the Astros to the brink and they took the first two from the Yankees. Do I think Otani will get traded? No, I do not. If they start to slide, then we'll reevaluate that conversation. But I think what the Angels will do will go get a couple relievers or a depth starter or like an average, you know, infield depth bat and not do a whole lot.
I think I agree. But as you said, we will be talking about the Angels plenty over the next few weeks, so we can move on from them here.
Let's take a quick break. And when we get back, we will talk about all the teams going for it, rolling up to the garage sale, pedal to the metal, screeching the brakes, hopping out of the car, throwing everything into a plastic bag, and speeding off.
This is former PGA Tour winner Smiley Kaufman, host of The Smiley Show, a SiriusXM podcast. You want to know what I love about golf? I get to talk to some really cool people. I get to walk the fairways of the best courses in the world with the best players in the world, and I get to share it with you every single week. Listen to The Smiley Show right now on Stitcher, Pandora, Apple, or wherever you get your podcasts. That's Smiley, S-M-Y-L-I-E.
And welcome back to Baseball Barbacast's Garage Sale Extravaganza Jubilee Jamboree. I'm Jake Mintz, that's Jordan Schusterman, and let's talk about the teams that should be going for it this deadline season. There are four clubs, the Orioles, the Reds, the Marlins, and the Diamondbacks, who are better than we thought they'd be, maybe quicker than we thought they'd be good. And as a result, we've never seen these folks at a garage sale before. You know, Jordan, you and I are regulars. And I've never seen Mike Elias, you know, around here.
Yeah. And, you know, until this little stretch, the last two against the Dodgers, whatever, the Orioles were on an 8-game winning streak and they were heading towards one of the best records in baseball. And obviously we're going to trade. And coming into the season, we said, okay, are the Orioles finally going to trade prospects? And they finally did one for Cole Irvin. But now the farm system is overflowing with offensive talent. And I know you go never too much. Well, I say you never have too much pitching. You could arguably have too much hitting. There are only so many positions, and with this many guys, now you have to pick the right ones to keep, right? And that's a delicate balance. You know, that is a little scary to say. These are the guys we're gonna roll with. But I mean, Ken Rosenthal just wrote about it this morning. Whether it's Otani, whether it's Blake Snell, right? Whether it's Giolito, whether it's like now feels like the time to start to cash in. I know that the Orioles, we thought when they would be ascending into this time, it would be a little bit more gradual. But why wait? Like at this point, these guys are there. The core is there. The core is going to be there no matter what. We know who the untouchables are. And I think it's now time to really start taking some swings. But we just do not know what that looks like, as you said.
Correct. Gunnar Henderson, Adley Rutschman, and Jackson Holliday are not going anywhere. I remain skeptical that Mike Elias is going to push all the chips in, because doing it for 2 months of anybody is not his style. Yeah. And I don't think there are any pitchers on the market with an extra year of control that are worth it. Maybe Shane Bieber if he was healthy. Maybe Corbin Burns if the Brewers were worse. I can see them trading for Giolito, but I wouldn't say trading for Lucas is going all in. If you are not, you're not, to get Giolito, it takes like one top 100 guy, maybe, and then a couple depth guys, right?
It's but, not which that again, much. So do that. Like, I don't care whether that's all in or not. Sure. Like, I think that that seems like a good, reasonable risk to take.
Right. And they need arms. So I could totally see them doing something like that. They should not add a single person who owns a baseball bat. They have more than enough hitters on this team for a couple different lifetimes. They could use another bullpen arm. I think they'll go definitely get someone like that. I mean, behind Felix Bautista and Yennier Cano. But yeah, man, I understand the argument for them going for it. And like, would I go for it? Probably. That being said, there's a general skepticism around the league when you ask people about the Orioles. Mike Elias comes from kind of a conservative Astros long-term view background, and folks don't think he's going to push all the chips in.
I agree.
In one big move. And I kind of I get that, right?
I just want to say, I know there's been a lot of rumors about the Cardinals as a potential Mariners trade partner, but I got to say, man, the Mariners have some nice cost-controlled pitching that if we ever have like a Mariners-Orioles blockbuster, I know they've certainly made those in many years ago, that would be interesting, but I still agree with you. I do think they'll be, but I hope they do. So I really hope, because last year, listen, we don't have to, I think obviously that's worked out great, right? Indisputably what they did last year, Mike Elias looks like a genius as much as it hurt at the time, but whether they sold those guys or not, the conversation at the time too was also they should be buyers. And I totally understood looking at that team and saying, no chance we're buying. This is a team you should be buying. I'm not saying you throw it all in, you trade Kjærstad and Norby and Kowser and all these guys. No, but like, please do something. Your team is way too good to just sit there. Like this, I truly feel that way. Way different than last season.
A team that is slightly different is the Reds, who have scuffled over the last couple weeks. They're in an L6. They might belong in a different category, which is the are you good enough to buy category. They still are 4 games over .500, 2.5 back in the division, 3 in the wild card. Jordan, what do you think your local club does at the deadline?
Well, I was just going to say them and Miami and Arizona, and I know Arizona won last night. These teams have really fallen back in the last few weeks in a way that has made their deadline plans a little bit more questionable. And I think how good we think all three of these teams are is a little bit different. As for the Reds, the thing is that what's been the problem over the last few weeks is exactly what the issue was. And Nick Kroll, who has clearly made some extremely good moves over the last few years, including at the deadline last few years as sellers, he said, everyone says, we need pitching, we need pitching, we need pitching, we need pitching. And that's true because Green and Lodolo are now apparently both going to be out until closer to September. So they're not coming back anytime soon. They need arms so badly. But as Nick Kroll has said, we are like where the trade conversations are right now are not at a place we want to go. And I understand that restraint, but the Reds cannot afford to sit around and wait. If they want to actually make a run at this division, there's every day that passes is going to become more problematic, because as we've seen over those last 2 days, like they just do not have the depth to withstand, and it has a domino effect for the games moving forward, because you're taxing your bullpen to such a crazy degree that's already so thin and your starters are already not going deep into games. It is just getting worse and worse and worse. So they can't sit, if they're going to do something, there's not waiting until August 1st to do it, because at that point you might be 7 games behind Milwaukee. So I think we're about to find out here, like how much, but at the same time, they still have a really strong farm and a lot to deal from. And so I think that if they want to do a little something, even if it is for a rental, They have the pieces to do it, and I'm excited to see how aggressive they get.
The Marlins and D-backs are in kind of a similar situation, I think, where they're both, if they were in the NL Central, I'd say go in, but they are not. They're in a much more crowded division, both of them currently in third place. The Marlins are a half game back in the wild card, as are the Diamondbacks. Or sorry, I think the Marlins are half game up in the wild card. But I just have a level of skepticism about the Marlins. I don't know, man. Let me correct that.
Yeah.
The Diamondbacks are a half game up in the wild card. The Marlins are a half game back. Of these two teams, who's more likely to buy?
I think probably Miami. But I don't know, like, because Miami, it's like how well the season has gone. Like Arizona, you sort of see more of a window opening up, and it's not like, oh my God, we're good. We have to be good. Like, we have to take advantage of this right now. Like, there's a little bit more kind of coming up together. And the Marlins have young talent where you could sort of argue the same thing. But I also feel like it's not every year where the team that's spending $400 million on their team is so much worse than you. And this is the division you're going to be in. And so, like, that is an opportunity that they should probably not be passing by, which makes me think that they probably will be more aggressive than Arizona. What's more interesting with these two teams compared to Cincinnati is they clearly need help in a few different places, but I'm not sure what the one thing they clearly need is for either of these teams. I think for Arizona, it's probably pitching. It's probably bullpen, but not as much where Cincinnati is like, oh my God, we need arms so badly. And even Baltimore too, to some degree. That's where it's harder to see the path that they're going to go.
Marlins, thank Gene Segura for his contributions and go get Jaime Candelario. There yes. you go.
Please. Please do that. No brainer.
But yeah, those the Diamondbacks, for the Diamondbacks, it's just, I would say, a couple more arms.
Yep. At least. They're one where, like, I mean, I can't see Snell being there, but, like, why not they get Giolito? Right? Like, right. That's a totally easy, like, one for a rental that would make plenty of sense. So both all three of these teams are going to be so interesting because we just were not expecting to be talking about them in these terms at the start of the season.
Next category. Are you good enough to buy? Is it worth it for these organizations to go out and make big acquisitions to push for October when it is not a guarantee that they will be there at all? We're talking about the Red Sox, the Mariners, the Twins, the Brewers, the Yankees, and the Guardians. Let's talk about the Guardians and the Twins first as a group, because that simplifies our lives, and we can do that literally all season long. They're going toe-to-toe in the kiddie pool division in the American League Central. They both have enormous flaws. The Twins are a super weird team because no one's been horrible. Like, most of their offensive group, I think Ken Rosenthal wrote about this today, like, most of their offensive group has been fine. But their stars are not performing.
No one has been amazing on the team.
No one has a Fangraphs WAR over 1.2. That's wild, dude.
I'm seeing that on Baseball Reference, there's 0% chance you would guess who their leading hitter is in WAR. It is Willy Castro, I think entirely on the basis of defense, which is concerning. But yeah, like, the names in the lineup, you're still like, okay, but none of them have been performing like stars. And Buxton, that is the biggest problem, I would say, is that he is a DH with a 694 OPS. And correct. So I would have to say it has to be offensive upgrades. Again, there's fewer of those available in this market, whereas the pitching has been sensational. Like, their pitching has been so good. And so that's why they have a chance here. But I'm not sure who that bat is that really helps them that much.
You're hoping to get someone on a heater for 2 months, whether it's Bellinger or CJ Krohn or Grichik. You're looking for a corner bopper who's just going to get hot and carry you for a little bit. Let's move on to Cleveland. They have a similar problem. I mean, this offense at times is just brutal. They're also honestly a great fit for Bellinger. Respect to Miles Straw, but I think it might be time to move on from that. I mean, he's just such an offensive zero in center field, and Bellinger is just as good of a defender. And maybe not just as good, but he's in the same general category.
That's a great fit. I will say the thing that has changed about them is that Josh Naylor has been one of the best hitters in baseball for the last 2 months. He has legitimately been a power force that he has, even though you look at him like, oh yeah, that guy had 40 home runs. The power production actually hasn't really been there. He's just been a normal good hitter, but now he's hitting the ball over the fence. Him and Ramirez have both been amazing. Kwan has certainly been better recently. It's still a ridiculously thin lineup that does not really scare you that much. And so I, again, would hope that they're going for offensive upgrades. I just don't really know what those look like. And the pitching is not nearly as intimidating as it has been in years past.
That is true, but they have so many young arms in the upper minors and who have just matriculated to the big leagues. They are a potential trade partner for the Orioles and for the Cardinals. Mm-hmm. Keep an eye on the Guardians making a deal with the Cardinals for maybe some of those young bats that are already at the big league level coming back to Cleveland. Something to mention with Cleveland, they have a reputation in the industry for being very stingy and difficult to deal with when it comes to trade conversations.
Not that they haven't made, I mean, they've made some, yeah, some really good trades too, and also some not so good trades, but that is a good point. And but them in Minnesota, again, we're underwhelmed by both of them. Could totally see either of them winning the division. When they, because the division title is there for them to take, they should both be aggressive.
Let's now talk about Milwaukee, which is a similar conversation. The Brewers could probably, in my opinion, if the Reds don't figure their shit out, the Brewers could sleepwalk their way to a division title and just find themselves in the playoffs.
They're basically where St. Louis was last year. I mean, not as good, but in the standpoint of just like, we're chilling. Like, we're a competent, good baseball team, and that's really all it takes to win this division. It's not as bad as the AL Central, because the Reds have at least pushed them. But the way the Reds are trending and the way that the Cubs have like, this division could possibly get easier if the Cardinals keep going backwards. So, yeah.
And what's weird about the Brewers is there's two arguments here. On one hand, you could say, we're guaranteed a spot in October, basically, unless we totally fuck it up or the Reds get it together. That means that October is such a coin flip that we're already in. Like, let's just take our chances with the club we have and then not sell anything off. But then the flip side is, well, you're going to be there. So build the best possible roster you can for a postseason series right now. You have that opportunity to look at it like that. So we'll see what the Brewers do. Honestly, another good fit for Bellinger.
Wow, Bellinger and Yelich having the same resurgence. I know earlier on in the season, we were really optimistic about some of those young hitters like Joey Weimer, like Bryce Terang. And while they have been excellent defenders, the offense hasn't really come along the way it was for Garrett Mitchell, who, of course, has been out for the year. So another team whose lineup is really, really, really lacking and could use any sort of offensive thump. I mean, I view them in Cleveland very similar. It's just that Milwaukee has more of a cushion in their division.
Let's put the Yankees and the Red Sox together.
How about that?
The Yankees. So I actually think the Yankees are similar to the Mets, where might it behoove them to sell? Yeah, maybe. Do they have enough to make it worth it? No. Gleyber Torres is the one big piece I guess they could trade away. But there aren't veterans on expiring deals besides Harrison Bader and Luis Severino, who's been mediocre. I just can't see the Yankees selling. They've only done that once in the last 25 years, and granted, it served them very well when they traded Andrew Miller away in 2016. Mm-hmm. Yeah, at the same time, like, what are they going to go out and get? I guess they need an outfield corner bat. But what they really need is Josh Donaldson and DJ LeMahieu to announce their retirements tomorrow.
Well, it seems like Donaldson's probably out for the year anyway. So I don't think they have to worry about him anymore. But yeah, I mean, there's all kinds of things going wrong in this offense. That's not exactly breaking news. I agree with you. I think that like there's no chance that they're going to punt on the season with Judge seemingly coming back kind of soon. I don't think that's going to be enough to make them World Series contenders. I think this team's very flawed. But like, they're still good enough to be in the mix even after the deadline, even if they add minimal things. Like, as much as we hate to admit it, and as much as we are all enjoying the immense frustrations in recent weeks, it's still a good enough team that there's no way that they're going to be able to fully sell. Because to your point, like, it's not, there's really nothing they can do that's going to put them in that great of a situation next year relative to if they just stay put and hope that they turn it around this season.
The Red Sox, I just don't know what to do with them. They are the team that confuses me the most right now in Major League Baseball. Their Kiki Hernandez is a free agent, but he's bad. Adam Duvall was the best player in the world earlier this year. He's a free agent. James Paxton has been really good. I can't see them selling because they've been hot recently, but I can't see them going all in. It's a bizarre one.
Yeah, I don't know what to make of them either. I mean, I think like Paxton would be a very attractive I mean, if he's as risky as it gets health wise too, but like he's been quietly great. Duvall has certainly been, I think, a decent since he came back too after being out for a while. So they maybe have more interesting chips than the Yankees in a spot where you could see them pivoting in that direction. But I don't think so. I think they're going to end up just kind of playing it out and hoping that. But it's weird because I'm not really sure, especially on the pitching side, besides Brian Baio, like, I don't know what they're building to. Like, I don't know what is the rotation plan, the long-term rotation plan. I have no clue. And so that is something, too, if we're thinking about building up an actual team that's going to compete for a long time, that needs to be figured out more than anything. Because, hey, Yoshida is fucking awesome. Like, that was an indisputable giant dub for Chaim Bloom. I love it. I love Yoshida. He's great. But the rest of this roster is still in just such a state of confusion that I don't know what else to really expect. And at the deadline, I just don't think they know enough probably to go in either direction.
I think the Mariners are in that same category. Hmm.
Yeah, and the Mariners have at least a core on both sides of the ball, certainly on the pitching side, where you're like, great. Like, if we run this back with a little bit more oomph behind the offense, with a little bit more intention behind adding offensive pieces, there is a pitching staff here moving forward that you can clearly believe in, almost more than almost any other team, truly. But the offense has been so, not to say hot and cold. I mean, they've barely gotten hot. It's been lifeless. It's been warm and lifeless. That is really what we've gone with the Mariners offense this year. I don't know. They've been so aggressively average, as I've said. They're not a bad team. Are they a good team? Probably not. Do they have enough to kind of go on a little bit of a stretch here like we've seen them sort of do in recent weeks? Maybe. I don't know. But at the same time, it's DePoto. They can't really afford to totally punt on the season too. And they also don't really have that much to sell either. So I would expect them to try to do stuff around the fringes, but I don't think they have enough to really, really make some big moves.
Let's fly through the buyers. The buyers getting in their car, get in, we're going shopping. These are teams who can contend for a World Series title, who have some flaws and could improve at the deadline. Let's start with the Rays. Where can the Rays improve? It's actually pretty straightforward and pretty weird. They need a starting pitcher. They only have four healthy ones right now between McClanahan, Taj Bradley, Glasnow, and Zach Eflin. They don't have a fifth. They've made that work before in the past, but I would expect the Rays to go out and get a depth starter. On the offensive side of the ball, I don't see them adding a significant piece. Anything on them, or can I move on to the Jays?
Nope. I think that's fair.
There's a good team, but they need another pitcher. I'm skeptical that they'll like go all in for Ohtani or anything
like
that.
If they get Jordan Hicks, watch out. they need more bullpen help than I think they've needed in quite some time. And so I think they can patch together that fifth starter spot with enough combinations of relievers, but they need arms in some form for sure.
Yeah. The Toronto Blue Jays, who are still in the mix, they are unlikely, I think, to get another arm. They currently have six once Hyunjin Ryu gets back, even though Alek Manoah is a huge question mark. Big thumbs up for you for the Ryu return.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. I'm so excited about him coming back. Like, I really have not. He's one I just saw. He pitched well in his rehab start. Like, that's a great addition, and I think could be big for them. Because, like, let me tell you, Kikuchi has not been it. I know, as much as we're worried about Manoah, Kikuchi's given up more homers than any pitcher in baseball. So whether Ryu's going to take his spot or figure out with Manoah, like, that's a big, big, big addition for them.
Alejandro Kirk has been horrible offensively this year and great defensively. That's a very odd dynamic. I think this team probably needs a veteran bench bat just to give them a little bit more depth. With all due respect to Nathan Lukes, who is their fourth outfielder at the moment. Let's move on to the San Francisco Giants, a team that perplexes at every single turn. You saw them last night. Why are they good? We don't know.
W7, baby. Here come the Giants once again. It's just a diet version, probably way more than diet version of 2021. It's just a lot of pieces kind of working together. But the different element here is we have young players. And Patrick Bailey, if there's something I learned being around that team, that dude is just so the real deal. Whether or not his offensive numbers are sustainable, both him and Casey Schmidt, fantastic personalities on and off the field. Like, they strike out a shit ton and walk never, But like that kind of aggression and energy and youth is not something we've had with the Giants recently. And that's a fun new ingredient to a team that we've used to just being a bunch of mishmash of veterans. I think they're pretty solid. I don't know if they can win the division, but like this is definitely a good team. And at the same time, their farm system's in kind of a weird place. So I don't know what the obvious pieces are to trade for them, but like they should be aggressive. I just don't know what that looks like.
Yeah, I think they need another starter. Ross Stripling has really disappointed this season. They could go get one of the depth types just to solidify the back of the rotation. The Dodgers, not going to do anything crazy because they have so much pitching on the IL that they're expecting to get back over the next couple months that I don't think
they're Are they, though? I mean, who's, like, I guess we're hoping, like, are we counting Bueller in that? Mays are obviously out for the year. Urias has been disappointing. Like, I think there's a reason why the Giolito to the Dodgers things make so much sense. Like, they are as good of, if you're connecting one position to one team, they can't get through this season without adding another starting pitcher. And we thought they had the depth with Grove and with, and we sort of seen it with Emmett Sheehan. He's sort of come up, but like they got to do something. Unless they're calling everybody up from Tulsa, I don't think they can get through this season without adding at least one starting pitcher.
And they need a reliever.
At least one. Yeah. That's another thing. The bullpen has not been nearly as good as it has been in years past. And so I would expect them and Tampa to be bidding quite aggressively for pitchers.
Which is hilarious when you think about the past. The other thing with the Dodgers, don't expect a big move on the offensive side. They're making it work. I think they're scoring more runs than anybody else in baseball. That's not an area of need. Three more teams in this group. The Rangers, the Astros, and the Phillies. Let's start with Texas. Bullpen help. That's it.
Duh. I know they already got Chapman. He's been great, but this is still a very thin unit. I'm still skeptical of this starting pitching. Again, this might be the best, second best lineup in the league. And that's going to carry them pretty freaking far. Like, it is an absurdly deep lineup. But besides the Eovaldi, I know Dane Dunning's been great. I just still don't really trust the rest of their starting pitchers. Martin Perez, I mean, salute that season he had last year, but it has not been the same. He is running, I think, a nearly career low strikeout rate. And while he's at least given them durability, he is not someone they should be excited to hand the ball to in a postseason game. And so that, I think, would also be a team. I think, too, just with the ethos of how this organization has moved in free agency and otherwise, this is a team I expect to do something crazy, truly. I really do think this is a team that is going to try and get aggressive in a big way this over the next few weeks.
And they have some pieces to move in a farm system that has improved a pretty decent amount over the last couple of years. The Astros are in an opposite spot. Farm system kind of sucks. And they need hitters, which is weird to say. Because Martin Maldonado, Jose Abreu, Mauricio Dubon, and Jeremy Pena and Jake Myers, like, are all below average hitters. Alex Bregman has kind of been blah. Their only great hitters are Chaz McCormick,
yep,
Kyle Tucker, and the injured Yordan Alvarez. Altuve's been on the IL. Like, where do they get a guy? Like, they get a corner bat? I know they're expecting Brantley to come back at some point.
So it's interesting because I view them similar to the Dodgers in that, like, when their top guys are going, 5 through 9 doesn't really matter. And assuming Yordan is going to come back and Altuve too, like, that top four is still so good that I still look at the pitching and the injuries they've had there and wonder. I know they've had success bringing up these randos you've never heard of, as good as anybody, to come up and have an ERA under 4, JP France, Brandon Bialik, you know, Seth Martinez, right? But I still think that they're probably more likely to pursue pitching, to be honest. Like, I think that they trust this offensive group, and like, it's hard to say that it hasn't worked. We watched them do it in the highest level many times over the last few years. So while the numbers are underwhelming, I think that they actually trust their offensive group maybe more than we think, assuming that they can get healthy. Obviously, if they don't have Yordan, they're probably doomed anyway, but he's that good. I think I view them the same way that I view that Mookie, you know, Freeman, Smith group atop of the Dodgers lineup.
They've scored the same amount of runs as the Cardinals, just for context.
No, I know. It hasn't been pretty. But also, wait, as the Cardinals, you said, they have some good hitters, so.
That's a funny way to think about it. Let's talk about the Phillies. Went to the World Series last year. They've really picked things up over the last couple months, crawled their way back into contention. Kyle Schwarber is on a fucking heater. It is the best thing in baseball, Jordan. When he is an automatic guaranteed home run every other day, oh, it's the best. It's the best.
Bryce finally homered too, which was nice to see. Still a very weird team, but they're good. They're certainly good enough. Weirdly, like, better at this stage than they were last year, probably, yep. Which is funny to think. But yeah, I still would imagine, again, when we talk about who's going to be aggressive, it's still probably Dave Dombrowski.
So the thing to remember about the Phillies is Bryce is going to start playing first base this weekend, which means that Boehm is going to move back to third. He's been playing a lot of first. And so that kind of changes the types of pieces that they're going to go out and get. I would have said like Candelario fits with them too. And Mundo Sosa has been a bit of a black hole for them as their third baseman. But besides that, there's not a lot of space to improve. Christian Pache has been incredible as like a defensive fourth outfielder type. I know he's hurt right now. Yeah, I guess they could go out and get another bench bat. CJ Krohn might be just a better version of Derek Hall. But on the pitching side, they've really figured some things out. Aaron Nola has gotten a lot better recently. Christopher Sanchez has come up and contributed. Taiwan Walker has strengthened some things together. I guess they could go get another depth starter like a Kyle Gibson, Noah Syndergaard move like they did last year. I would probably say they need another reliever. Gregory Soto has struggled a bit. But this team is pretty solid, man. I don't think they're going to do anything pretty outrageously aggressive. I think they're just going to scoop up a wild card spot. And like, I know it's easy to say Dave Dombrowski is going to do something wild. And I guess he did last year with all those trades they made with the Angels.
Mm-hmm. And that's kind of where I'm at. I just think that they'll come up with some creative move that looks a little goofy. And then either it will work out in spectacular fashion or it will be Mickey Moniak. I think that they're more likely to. Jeff Hoffman, by the way. Oh my God. That's been an incredible revelation. Credit to them for kind of putting this bullpen together, not in the way that we expected, right? We were so focused on Kimbrel and Soto and Dominguez, and instead they've had some other guys like Andrew Vasquez and Jeff Hoffman step up in a big way. But that's how a lot of good teams work now. It's the relievers are the best relievers are not the ones you're necessarily counting on. So I still would expect them to pursue some sort of pitcher, but I just don't know what that looks like.
Jordan, we've talked about 29 baseball teams. The Braves. So here's the deal with the Braves and the garage sale analogy. They got enough shit at home, man. The Braves could not leave their house and they would still be the best team in baseball. Will they go out and make a move? I'm sure. Anthopoulos does this every deadline. He gets an extra reliever and he acquires a bench bat to hit for some home runs in the postseason time. But I'm not worried about the Braves. I'm not thinking about the Braves. They are in a different category than every other baseball team.
And yet, if they somehow got Lucas Giolito, I don't know how because their farm system is totally depleted. Like, I'm looking at their postseason rotation, and I know that Max Fried is supposed to come back. Obviously, Strider, Morton, Fried are locks. Elder is like all-star, of course, Elder. But like, there's a version where his next few months does not put him in a great position. But bless his heart, it's been an amazing run. I'm glad he was an all-star. He'll keep getting ground balls. There is totally a scenario where we are not excited to hand the ball to Bryce Elder in a postseason game. And so that fourth spot, I don't know what is going on with Kyle Wright. I know he's been injured. That's like maybe a weird X factor in some senses. But I could still see, because remember, the whole thing with them is it's like, why would they do that? They didn't need to do that too. That was the whole point of Sean Murphy. You could say that with a few of the other moves they made. That is not going to stop them from trying. Does that mean that they have the pieces to get it done? I kept saying no, and yet they got Sean Murphy. So would it surprise me if they can find a way to trade for Snell or Giolito? Honestly, at this point, no. Will it be a top priority? Probably not.
Let's take one last quick break. And when we come back, we will run through a couple quick notes. News items and banter topics from the last couple days in baseball. Hope you enjoyed the trade deadline preview. This was a weird outro. Talk to you in a second. And welcome back to the end of a delightful baseball barbacast. I'm Jake Mintz. That's Jordan Schusterman. A lot of runs last night, buddy, huh?
Yeah, that's one way to put it. First time probably ever, according to Baseball Reference, since at least 1901. That's how we have to preface all of our fun facts.
But that's what that ever were, means. That's what ever means.
First time ever, by Jake's definition, that there were four games on the same day in which both teams scored 10 plus runs. The Mexican League is like, that's Tuesday. What's the big deal? It was weird. I was at one of these games, although I left early for the Giants and Reds because it was like not a doubleheader. They finished the first game, whatever. It is jarring to open up. Like, honestly, it feels like spring training when you open up the at bat app and you just see a bunch of slop. Like, that is what it felt like opening the at bat app when I got home yesterday. I was like, what is going on? And I know that those games, I love it. I know, I prefer a pitcher's duel. A night like this, the problem is that normally you only have one of these a night. It was like overwhelming to go through all of these box scores, I would say. It's a lot of back and forth, certainly plenty entertaining. But yikes, man, I couldn't handle this every day.
My favorite was the Braves Diamondbacks 16-13 thriller. Mm-hmm. If you had said which of these games will be 16-13, I would have said the one with Bryce Elder and Zach Davies going toe to toe.
Yeah. How about the game at Coors Field with the Astros being one of the lowest scoring games of the day? that really sums it up. I mean, the Cubs putting up 20 hits on the Nats, the Mets offense breaking out, but still being out hit by the White Sox, Cleveland scoring 10 runs on 13 hits. Like, there was just, it was completely out of control. And there was probably still runs left on the table. As I mentioned, like, only 7 combined runs in Colorado. You know, the Blue Jays only scored 1. Like, there's all kinds of, Orioles only scored 3 runs. Like, there was plenty more runs to be had.
The Guardians scoring 10 runs in Pittsburgh on the day that the Pirates introduced number 1 overall pick Paul Skeens. Isn't that poetry?
Yeah, and Cleveland scored 11 on Monday. So that show tells you how much Pirates stuff is going. It's like, hey, Paul, can you... It's like, I know we have you in uniform for like these nice photos. Like, can you actually, can you start tomorrow?
Can you take off your bizarre skull and crossbones tie that you wore to the press conference and get on a mound? Jordan, briefly, can you tell me about the Reds? You're there all the time and keep losing. What's the fucking deal?
Let's hope they win and I'll talk about them on Friday. I just wanted to tell one quick story. We talked about them before. Like, they need pitching so badly. I don't know where it's going to come from, but it's going to have to show up soon because the guys that are hurt are not coming back soon. Quick story. Quick, very miniature edition of Tales from the Yard. Jake, have you seen the Giants yet this season in person?
On opening day.
You did see them on opening day. Do you remember anything notable, like going in the Giants clubhouse and like anything specific that you remember? Of course, this is a big part of their offseason, but it just struck me when I was in the clubhouse yesterday.
Aaron Judge wasn't in there?
No. Good point. The Rodgers twins. I walked into the visiting clubhouse. Like, duh, I'm not breaking news here. But watching them sit on the couch next to each other in like slightly similar, not street clothes, but like not uniform, and like look at their phone, one holding their right hand, one holding their left hand, I felt like I was in some very strange, like, it's like I've never seen identical twins before, but seeing them in the wild, not in uniform, was even funnier than seeing them on the field. So funny. Anyway, twins are weird. All right, Jake,
wait,
you
just
said
a quick
you wanted
thing.
To.
Thinking about the Rodgers yesterday too. Like,
yeah,
their parents naming them Tyler and Taylor is so annoying. Like, it is so disrespectful, in my opinion.
To the media.
It's to us.
It's about us.
Well, not just us, but to them, bro. Jordan, if you had a sibling named Justin, you would fucking hate that, dude.
No, I know. There's all kinds. It's crazy. But they clearly, I guess, they ain't hiding from it. It's not like they're trying to, like, they are not, they're leaning into it all the way, as they should. And they are both very good pitchers. Jake, you have on the doc here, it says, Jake wants to admit something. So, Jake, please go ahead at the hour mark here of this podcast. Please admit something. I don't know what you are going to say, but say it, and then I will respond, and then we will say goodbye.
I find myself rooting for the Angels.
Wow. Wow. Such courage and bravery. I think you sort of said something along these lines on Monday's show, how you want, as an Angels hater, you want Ohtani to carry them. Here's what I'm going to say. You have watched them against the Yankees the last 2 days.
No, it was and I guess it was against the Astros before that.
You've watched them against the Astros and Yankees. So let's see. We can pull up their schedule and see how hard you'll be rooting for them against some of these other teams. You're going to root for them against my favorite team. What a shitty friend. No, I'm kidding. I understand the sentiment that you're saying. I am obviously not there because the Mariners are directly competing with them. But I get it, and I don't totally disagree with you from a neutral fan perspective.
Like, this team has a little bit of panache and spice and compelling shit more than the other previous Angels teams. Like, Zach Neto rules.
Yeah, there's a lot to like. We love Mickey Moe. I'm with you. There are pitchers that I very much enjoy watching. I'm like, totally. And it's not like we're rooting against Ohtani. We want Shohei to win, to be on a winning team. Jeez, one time.
Even Matt Theis, right, who is pretty boring.
I can't go that far.
He's an interesting swinger. Like, the swing is compelling. It's a bizarre swing.
Just doing a Jared Walsh impression while Walsh is hurt. Like, it is a carbon copy of the Walsh homers that he was hitting when he was good.
So as I was overwhelmed by this feeling last night of, like, hoping the Angels win, I thought about my past as an Angels hater. And was it the type of situation, Jordan, when you're in elementary school and you have a crush on someone and then you're mean to them? Was this a dynamic you remember?
Yeah, I mean, it's a very problematic one that some people I understand carry into adulthood. But when you're 12, there's at least that excuse.
Right. This person is bullying me. They like me. It's very bizarre and complicated and confusing. But maybe that's how I was treating the Angels.
You like them all along.
Was I negging the Angels because I had feelings for them all along, Jordan?
That's all I'll say. I don't know if I can support this, but this is an interesting storyline to watch. However, like, are you going to go down with this ship? Really?
Oh, no. I don't have to do that at all. Like,
I'm saying, like, if this gets ugly, you know, let's say they keep Ohtani, right? Just say they keep Ohtani. They're still around 500 over the next 2 weeks. They keep Ohtani. Ohtani's doing his best. He's the best player you've ever seen. But it just keeps going bad. And they're 7 out, an 8 out, a 9 out. Are you still going to be like, come on, guys, you can do it? No.
This is not a long-term relationship. I can bounce whenever. I mean, this is casual. This is a casual hookup. Me and the Angels, okay? Jordan, now that I'm engaged, I need to have these types of baseball relationships in my life. You know?
Such courage to say, I'm rooting for them against the Astros and the Yankees.
I'm a hero. What can I say?
I know. I'm just going to say, here are the teams they have coming up on the schedule.
Oh, I know.
Pirates, Tigers. So, doesn't sound like the Angels are good. Well, who knows? Trap games left and right. Blue Jays, Braves, 4-game set at home against the Mariners, Giants, Astros, Rangers. Maybe you'll swing back around for that Texas road trip. you'll be right back on with the Angels then.
I'm going to watch Angels in the Outfield 500 more times. Jordan, they have the Jesus ad behind home plate.
Yes, he gets us. Yeah.
He gets us. And I'm he just gets like, you. That's an Angels in the Outfield ad. Like, we did this. We made 2 movies about this.
I always support that film, obviously. Go back to those jerseys, then we can have a conversation. Mm. All right, that's it. We did another episode of Baseball Barbercast. Thank you for listening. Thank you, Jake Mintz, for joining me. Thank you to Chris Tyler for producing. As always, we will be back on Friday. Maybe we'll have a trade by then. Maybe, possibly, probably not. Who knows? Everyone is going to wait till the last minute because that's how baseball works now. But maybe they'll give us a trade to talk about. But until then, thank you, Jake. Again, you can email us at baseballbarbacast@gmail.com. Maybe we'll hit some emails on Friday or early next week. A lot of fun stuff coming up for sure. But until Friday, enjoy the next couple of days. We'll see how many runs are scored tonight. Goodbye.
SiriusXM Podcasts.